What is author marketing mastery through optimization, you ask? I'm going to tell you, it's the best way for us authors to make a living selling our books. Are you tired of hearing gurus tell you your book is only good enough to be a lead magnet for services? Are you tired of feeling like you have to be a slave to social media and then frustrated when the time you spend doesn't actually help you sell books? I was too, until I found Ammo. Ammo is the only program that reliably produces results, and it works for anyone. Is it hard work? You bet. Do you have to overcome some of your own prejudices to make Ammo work for you? Absolutely. But rather than being another program that rah-rah shishkoom boss tries to get you emotionally excited only to offer unclear methods, Ammo shows you how to design profitable ads step by step through a unique, highly tested and targeted formula. The founder, Steve Piper, is a data-loving, formula-driven author who escaped the kingdom of Amazon to build a platform for himself, where he sold directly to his readers and built a loyal following and millions of copies sold. With Ammo, you know who's reading your books, how to contact them, and what they want to read next. If you've always been frustrated with Amazon's wall of mystery of not knowing who's reading your books and losing 50 to 70% of your hard-earned money that you're making through sales, Ammo solves all of those problems by putting you in the driver's seat and showing you how to fulfill your books directly to your readership. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
So, word on the street is that I am currently live. I believe I'm live on YouTube. I've never done a live before, so yay for me. And here's the deal. I'm doing live because I've been thinking I need to do live. It's something that people seem to enjoy. I've never done it before. So I'm doing it right now. And I think this is a great episode of the podcast to do live because I'm going to be talking about something that I think hopefully will resonate with a lot of writers and is right in the wheelhouse. And that's doing the uncomfortable things that get you to the place you're going and the unbelievable side effects of doing the uncomfortable, hard things that give you progress. So let's rewind about 12 hours. Last night, I was laying in bed and it was a long weekend. I went on Friday down to Cabot, Arkansas to sell my books at the Strawberry Festival. And Friday night, I sold just one set of books, three in all, to a police officer. And that was the sum total of the sales I made on Friday night. So 5 hours after having driven 10 hours to get there, and I made $40. That's my gross income. So I was a little bummed and I was worried. I was concerned about the next day. I only had one more day and I had to make up a total of 20 hours of driving worth of gas and the cost of the show. And I had to do that in just Saturday, one day. So, you know, I think pretty reasonably concerned. Saturday, I did pretty well. After I settled the books on everything, I lost about $35 for the trip. Now, there's a benefit to this because I got to see my really good friend, Joe. Joe has been a longtime supporter of the show. He worked for the same company that I did for several years. I had the opportunity to be his manager, and it seems that I did a good enough job that we've been friends ever since. He's a huge Baltimore Orioles fan, and we always have a great time chatting and talking. I hadn't seen him in a long time, and this was the perfect excuse. You know, it's kind of like taking a free trip to visit a good friend. Which is essentially what it was. It was half a tank of gas, basically, is what I paid to see my good friend. I was a D-bag, and I didn't buy his birthday dinner. I still feel badly about that. I literally was pouting because I had such a bad Friday night that I wasn't willing to pull out my wallet, and that's selfish and awful of me. So I've apologized to him privately. Apologizing again right here on air. I'm sorry, Joe, that I didn't buy your birthday dinner. That was damn selfish of me, and may karma spare me what I deserve. So anyways, I have this long weekend. Saturday's a good day. And I decide I'm just going to head back at around 5 o'clock. The live music at the event is playing. I've had good sales and I don't think that I'm going to really make any more sales for the rest of the evening. If it's anything like Friday was, there wasn't a ton of traffic. It was very loud, et cetera, et cetera. So I got in the car and I drove. I kept thinking I would stop and sleep. I didn't stop and sleep. And around 3:30, I pulled into the street at my house, rolled inside, got some sleep, and made my way through yesterday. I actually did some sprints, And felt fairly good overall. We watched The Holdovers, directed by, I'm having a brain fart right now. I'm really sorry, because you're the great, great director of Nebraska and Downsizing and several other fantastic films. Anyways, I'm live, so I got to just move on. But anyways, an amazing film. If you haven't seen The Holdovers, I highly recommend it. Great film. And then I went to bed. So that was kind of my weekend. It felt very long. There was some rest involved. If you are watching this live, which is a real possibility right now, you probably noticed that I have a reddish hue to my face. I was outside for the majority of 3 days. I did not sunburn. And that plays into where this conversation is going to go. Many of you know, if you've listened to my podcast for a while, that I am what's called a carnivore. I have been that for two of the last 3 months. And I intend to be that for the foreseeable future. A carnivore is a strict way of eating where you have meat, salt, water, and a handful of animal products. So I will occasionally have a little bit of cheese. I'll occasionally have some sour cream. I have a ton of butter. So like dairy products from animals are okay on carnivore. Some people do well with them, others don't. I'm so new at this. I'm more research-based than I am experience-based. But what I can tell you is that I'm experiencing a lot of different benefits and not necessarily all of the ones that most people have. So this isn't specific to writers, but maybe one day I might try to do a little bit of blending, because I do believe that healthy diet is at the center of a lot of the things that you want to accomplish in your life. And I believe that if you look around, you will notice the people who have the greatest degree of success have mastered their diets and they do really well. I listen frequently to Armchair Expert podcast with Dax Shepard. And he has been tremendously successful in the podcasting area. He was successful as an actor. I don't think he feels like he's a top tier leading man or anything like that when it comes to Hollywood, but he's definitely had some great hits. And he's a recovering alcoholic, somebody who is advocating for Alcoholics Anonymous and does not drink. He's been sober for the better part of 20 years, I think. He had one relapse that he actually recorded a podcast about. But there's a guy who is working really hard to master his diet. And part of that has to do with denying the addictions that so mastered him for a long time. I could go on and on about people. Alex Hormozi, somebody that I talk about a ton on this podcast, he's another person who has a foundation in diet and exercise. There's just a ton of people, and they all point to diet and exercise being a big part. Now, there are plenty of successful people who aren't, so I'm not saying that you have to, but I think you'll find that it's very common that people who achieve any level of fame will have been fairly public about dietary issues. It just seems to be really important. I'm bringing that up because there's something strange that starts to happen when you master your diet, when you master the way that you eat, when you master your lifestyle, when you have success, even if you feel good, even if you look better, even if you experience success, and you can point to that thing and say, hey, before I was drinking an excessive amount of alcohol, and I was not being as productive. I wasn't writing as many words per day. I wasn't doing as well with editing. I wasn't recording as quality of podcasts. Every area of my life was suffering because of the things that I was drinking, and nobody around me ever said, Jody, I'm not sure you're healthy. When I was eating whatever I wanted, we would laugh. We would go to parties and we'd say, man, Ashley and I can devour an entire sheet pan of nachos. And I'm talking like a family-sized bag of tortilla chips laid out with a family-sized bag of shredded cheddar cheese and then chopped jalapenos, beans, ground beef or chicken, something like that, kind of a meat, sauces, salsas, sour cream, queso, all the stuff just piled on and shoving that down the hatch. And not once during that time did anybody say, Jody, I'm concerned that that's not healthy. You're probably going to die of coronary heart disease. When I switched over to carnivore, at first I wasn't very public about it. I wanted to see how it worked for me. It pretty quickly started to show some signs of like positive move forward. Now, I will admit that part of that is just the exclusion of some things that were probably keeping me down, like alcohol, like sheet pans of nachos. But that doesn't really explain how quickly something started to change for me. So on the first day that I started Carnivore, it was pretty miserable. But by day two, my mood started to lift, just really lift. I felt in control. And by day two, I already was like, I don't feel this pull to drink and to overindulge in lots of carbohydrates. By about a week in, I was feeling really good. I was in my stride. My snoring had all but gone away, and I was getting higher quality sleep. So I was feeling well rested during the day. Focus was starting to dial in. I found that I could read longer. I could focus on my work longer. I could write more words. I could do more things. And those benefits incrementally have increased since I've been on the carnivore diet. The first time I did it all by myself for 45 days. And then I had a shot of vodka, and I felt deep shame, real frustration. It was a bad late night decision. I regret, I should not have done it. But it really helped to clarify for me that the carnivore way of eating was super beneficial for me. And the reason that is because after I had that shot of vodka, I slowly started letting alcohol back into my life. And I would make the excuse in my mind, well, alcohol is not carbs, so I'm not necessarily kicked out of ketosis. And I did actually continue to lose weight for a little while I was having some drinks. But it just, like, a lot of the other benefits went away. And I was like, I love drinking. I love feeling drunk. And so before you know it, I spent about a month outside of carnivore, eating those sheet pans and nachos again, drinking the beer, and gaining a lot of weight, getting inflamed and snoring. I got COVID during that time. It was brutal. It was really tough. And so right after Easter, I was like, I need to go back to carnivore, because it's the first time in my life that I've ever not felt the addictive pull toward things. It just, like, for some reason, when I eat exclusively meat and meat products, it blunts my desire to have any kind of addictive substance. You will likely experience the same thing. Anecdotally, everybody that I hear who sticks with the carnivore diet for a month or longer has this extreme reduction in impulsivity and this extreme lift of mood. Now, here's the thing. Is I got back on the carnivore diet, and I have been on, we're live right now. So let's see, how long have I been back on the carnivore diet? I have been back on for 35 days. Let's see, can you see that? There you go. Started carnivore diet 35 days ago. I've lost just about 3 pounds. My lowest weigh-in came yesterday morning. And that was largely just because I didn't eat a lot over the weekend. There weren't options when you travel. It's a little bit tougher. I made some meat. I brought like 3.5 pounds of ground beef with some ground pork in there. And it was like 80 degrees down in Arkansas, and I wasn't prepared with a cooler. So that meat was just sitting out for about 36 hours. When I ate it the day before, on Saturday morning, the fat tasted a little bit like blue cheese. And I was like, that's probably a sign that it's turning. So I ate as much as I could around the kind of the fat. I know you guys are disgusted right now. I'm disgusted with myself. But I ate as much meat as I could until I felt kind of full. And I was like, I'm going to, you know, part ways with the rest of this. Anyways, so I didn't eat a whole ton on the trip. And so I weighed 232 pounds, which is not quite my lowest, but it's pretty darn close in years. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, some cool things have happened. My waist measurement, or my navel measurement, has gone down about 4 inches in 35 days. So that is genuine progress. I can button my old shorts that I used to wear before I started gaining all the weight at the beginning of COVID. So in 2020. So my waist is actually the slimmest it's been since 2020. That's pretty cool. I feel healthy. I'm able to sprint. My recovery is really good. And you guys, at this point, you're probably being like, wait, isn't TRBM a show about author marketing? And yes, it is. I'm getting to that place. But I want to just talk to you about all of the good things that I'm experiencing here, because it's going to translate. This is what we call a long metaphor, an analogy. And so I'm setting up why this is a marketing conversation. But anyways, I am feeling without doubt the best that I have felt in a very long time. Not everything is fixed that I think can be fixed, but I'm noticing just continual incremental gains in my focus, in my energy, in my recovery, in my mood, in my health. I don't snore at all. Did I say that already? I sleep deeply most nights. I wake up feeling rested most nights. And 35 days is not a long time to fix any given issue. So hooray, this is awesome. I get comments from people, which is going back to what we were saying. I get comments from people that are like, your cholesterol must be out of control. I imagine your blood pressure's terrible. You're so unhealthy. You're going to die of a heart attack. You're going to die of a stroke. Meat is so unhealthy. How can you eat all that meat? It must be disgusting. I mean, on and on and on. People are watching me transform in multiple, numerous ways. I also am socially more outgoing, even with people that I'm typically shy around. And I'm just going to say, I think that has to do with the way of eating as well. You can look into carnivore, anything that I'm saying. There are doctors out there. There are people with actual medical degrees who will verify that they're seeing this kind of stuff with the patients that they treat. There are people who have left their medical practice in order to promote the carnivore lifestyle because nothing they've ever seen has been as beneficial for things. There are reports of tons of people who have issues like Crohn's disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, type 2 diabetes, on and on. The list goes like any kind of rheumatoid arthritis, any kind of autoimmune disease. Those things are addressed by a carnivore lifestyle and a strict carnivore lifestyle. And a lot of people see them reverse and completely go away while they're eating the carnivore lifestyle. Some of that stuff takes longer for sure, but people are seeing this kind of success. People are losing hundreds of pounds. People are going and getting blood work. And these are all things that you can verify. People are actually sharing their blood work that they had prior to the carnivore diet. And then they're showing their blood work after being on the carnivore diet for a period of time. And almost to a person, they have just endless benefits. And yet the people around you, they will pile on and they'll be like, you must be terribly unhealthy. You must be really sick. You must be. I'm worried about you. I'm concerned about you. How do you live without fiber in your diet? How do you live without eating vegetables? Vegetables are so healthy. Well, I've done my research and I'm not asking you to do your research, but what I am doing is I am preparing you that you know when people start to separate from you, that you are doing something that makes them feel judged. This is a weird part of humanity, is that when you feel judged, you turn that back and put it on the other person. When you feel that someone else is calling you out, you turn it back a lot of times and you push that back on them as a way not to address areas in your own life that you already feel are lacking. If you weren't concerned about something in your life, you would have no issue with what somebody else was doing in theirs. But if you feel insecure about something, you turn that back on other people. And that happens every time. So what I didn't talk about is that when we moved to Spokane, Ashley, I, and our son, Silas, we went out there and Ashley, I think, was actually pregnant when we were here in Omaha, but Edmund, our middle son, was born in Spokane. And right around that time, I had gone from about 185 pounds to 220. I've heard it called sympathy weight before. Men tend to gain weight while their wives are pregnant. And it happened pretty extremely with Edmund. So I went from 185 up to 220 and I looked pudgy and I see my face in pictures from around that time and I looked chubby. It's funny how in the moment you never look fat to yourself. Like right now I'm seeing my own face on this live stream and I don't feel like I'm super heavy looking, but you know, probably I'll look back in a while and be like, man, you would really put on packed on the weight because, you know, fat in the cheeks and everywhere. There's actually like fat up here in the like side of my head and stuff. And I can like objectively grab onto it, pinch onto it, but I don't notice it. Anyways, gotten off track a little bit there. I'd gone up to 220 and I didn't want to be that way. I felt heavy. I felt gross. I felt nasty. And so Ashley and I, we did what a lot of people do when they try to diet. We started calorie counting. And at first I calorie counted just with like the notes app on my phone, and every meal I ate, I would track those calories and I'd make sure I wasn't snacking, learned to drink a lot of diet soda at that time, learned to drink black coffee at that time, things I had never tried before. I remember fondly that time because I was able to lose a lot of weight and get back down. I got to my lowest weight that I've ever recorded at 174 pounds. So I was 9 pounds below my high school weight of 185. 185 always felt really comfortable to me. It's in my mind where I'm trying to get right now. But yeah, it was like, I was thin. And I look at pictures from back then, and I was like, I was thin. My face looked very angular. I think I looked really healthy, but do you know what? This was calorie counting. I was eating vegetables. I was eating basically like chicken and broccoli was my everyday thing. Chicken and broccoli, more chicken and broccoli. And then Ash and I would go and we would get pints of Ben and Jerry's ice cream and use a literal tablespoon measuring spoon and kind of scoop out a tablespoon of ice cream. You'd have three of those and you could fit that into your calorie counting. I wasn't drinking alcohol at that time in my life, so that wasn't a source of difficulty for me. But years later, I would kind of stay in that area. And sometimes I would introduce alcohol, gain a little bit of weight, kind of cut back on the alcohol, cut down. Alcohol's always been very provocative for my waistline. But all that to say, throughout that time, when I got down into the 180s, the 170s, people started saying, man, Jody looks sickly. Is he okay? Is he healthy? We're really concerned about him. They'd say it behind my back. Nobody ever during that time was like, you look great. You look awesome. Not a single person told me I look good outside of Ashley. Nobody said, wow, I can't believe how much weight you've lost. You look great. Why is that? That is crazy to me. You take control of your health. We all know that excess fat and pounds on our body, especially like the visceral fat. Now, I'm not going to go into the science behind this, but we all know that excess weight carries with it a higher cause mortality. We know that people are more likely to suffer heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, dementia, all the things we don't want that are killing us by the millions, the tens of millions, the hundreds of millions. And people will not say, congratulations, good job. They'll say, you look sickly. I wonder how many of you watching, listening right now have had that experience. You've been able to take some weight off. You've been able to claim a little victory over your health. And suddenly people are criticizing you. People are calling you unhealthy or sickly. Magnify that when you're on the carnivore diet. People are suddenly so concerned about you, really concerned. Jim Gaffigan has made the joke about beer, like, oh, you don't drink? You don't drink? You should go listen to it. I will ruin it if I try to actually tell the joke, but there's this sense of camaraderie. Hey, let's sink the ship together. Let's go down together. And if you're not willing to sink this ship, I don't know if I'm willing to be close with you because I'm sinking and I don't like it when people around me don't sink. I recorded an episode of the podcast not long ago encouraging people to quit. And it was successful in that it provoked the conversation that I was hoping it might provoke. Do I 100% agree with myself today in the same way I did when I recorded the episode? I don't know. I'm really grateful for the conversation with Craig Crawford. It's been continuously on my mind. My other friend and sometimes co-host Rich Hosek weighed in. I think he probably felt like I went a little bit too strong. But as I'm thinking back on my state of mind and what I want to encourage people who are witnessing my journey to get my books in front of more readers, to get my hands on the coattails of fame and ride that up as far as I can and reach thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of readers, millions of readers. Let's do this. I realize that the more extreme I am with any of my efforts, the more people start to criticize the kinds of actions that I take. So this weekend, when I went down to Cabot, there were people who laughed at me when I only sold three books on Friday night. Like, oh, you made a really bad choice and you're going to have to do better than that. And when I told people I only, you know, because I hadn't fully reconciled. So I thought originally I made $4. I actually lost about 35. But my first quick run through of everything was that I was $4 net positive. And people were like, boy, you're really going to be able to support the family with that. And I was like, yeah, I realized that it wasn't a great turnout. I felt the pressure of it. But guess what would have happened had I been like, you know what? I've been doing these shows. I'm not making any money. And I think it's just time to throw in the towel. You already know what would have happened. Everybody would have been like, we're so proud of you. You made a good effort. You did a good thing. But, you know, it's really noble to take care of your family and stay home more and, you know, go get a good W-2 and blah, 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 blah. Save for retirement. Make sure your kids go to a good college. Whatever BS thing people say, they get so excited when you quit. But if you say, hey, man, I consider it worth my time. I don't love being away from the family. But those are 30 new readers that I just found. Maybe three of them will love the books and come back and buy more later. Maybe three of them will tell a friend about them, and it'll lead to one more book purchase, one new reader. I don't really know. Maybe none of them. Maybe nobody who bought the books this weekend will even read them. That's out of my hands. But what is in my control is getting out and doing things and going as far as I can and taking risks. Sorry about the train. We're live, so I can't even pause. We're just going to roll through this train, folks. The train is rolling through town, and that is your life, train, rolling through town, blowing its horn. Look at me. Here I am. Don't get in front of me because I will not stop. Don't get in front of me because I won't stop. There comes a moment in all of this, and all of this craziness, when you start to realize that it is painful to pull away from one crowd to try to join the next crowd. I heard a really insightful comment listening to a podcast this week, and I want to share that there is a gap between where you are now and where you are going, and when you enter that gap, you will feel it extremely. And I am starting to feel it. And I can tell you this, and it is a good sign, but it is not fun. When the people that you used to know and associate with and enjoy are the ones who are criticizing the actions that you are taking, and yet the people that you want to belong to, the group that you see that is succeeding, the Hugh Howies, the Steve Pipers, all of the people, even the Lydia and David Scherers, the Jonathan Yannis, those people are experiencing the kind of success that I'm longing for, but I don't have the credentials to be part of that group. I can associate with that group. I can enjoy that group. I have access to that group of people, but I am not one of them. And there is a huge change that happens when you become one of them. There becomes a collaborative environment, but you're going to be between the old group and the new group. And when you're between, is one of the greatest pain points of your career, of your life. You're a writer. You have been doing this. You have been fighting hard to get a place. People have been holding you down. You've been allowing them to hold you down. And you realize, I can no longer allow them to hold me down. But man, it is tough because there's no one there who is providing a level of support or experience or wisdom to you because you're not big enough to be. And you're too big to be in the smaller group. I can just feel right now that there's some people who are watching or listening in this moment, and they're thinking to themselves, like, that sounds really elitist and awful. You're going to leave people behind? Well, I guess I would ask you to reframe the way you think about it. Are you leaving people behind, or are they leaving you behind? Because they could choose to come. They could choose to be with you. They could choose to see the things that you are doing. They could choose to use that moment to say, like, I know a guy who's actually walking the road right now. And it would be less lonely if I walked the road with him. I know a woman who's walking the road right now, and it would be less lonely to walk with her. They're not going to do it. It just doesn't happen. I don't know why, but it doesn't. Because it's so damn hard, so dang hard. I don't know if I'm allowed to say. I don't know what I can say when I'm living. So dang hard to go forward. You know what's weird is I don't know when I made the decision that I was going forward, but I know that I've had this mentality for a long time. I had a running joke with my friend, John. It was based out of truth. There's no way out but through. I used to say that comment, to the best of my knowledge, I made it up. The only way out is through. The only way out is through. But I've heard other people say it. So I must have heard it somewhere, liked it, and you know, kind of filed it away in the unconscious part of my mind. I've been saying that for decades now, since I first met John, and I was 19 years old. So we're literally 20 years on now. I've been saying the only way out is through. And I would joke about it sometimes because I was a cigarette smoker at the time. And I would say to him, you got to smoke through it. And we would go to the gym and run. And I remember one time jogging with him. He's like, oh, I'm really hurting. My shins are hurting or something. And I was like, you got to run through it. Whatever it was, you got to run through it. The only way out is through. When I quit smoking, I remember saying that all the time, that the only way out is through. And it sucks, man. When you are giving up something like that, that feels like life and vitality, and you know that the only way out is through. Then it means I literally have to choose right now to go through the hardest thing that I have ever experienced. And unless I choose to go through it, I'm stuck where I'm at. It's the hardest thing you'll ever do. And you'll do the hardest thing you've ever done over and over and over again, because Doing the hardest thing you've done once gets you to a new place, but it's quite easy to go backward. So you might have to do the hardest thing you've ever done every day for a year, for 2 years, for 5 years, for longer. And you're going to have to do the hardest things you've ever done. The first time that you take a cold shower, because you know that you've read the research and cold showers are all the rage right now. First time you just take a cold shower, tap cold, no heat, tap cold. It's probably 63 degrees water. So it's not even like as cold as you think it is, but it will feel like the hardest thing you've ever done. You will shiver. Your whole body will tense up. You'll have to focus on breathing. You put your head in there. It'll feel like you have a headache. It is so hard. And for 5 minutes, you're like, I hate my life. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. Because that's the cool thing about hard is that when it's hard, it's just it's hard. Like you can't separate hard from hard. That'll be the hardest thing that you've ever done. And then you'll take like a 33-degree polar plunge, whole body in 33-degree water. That's twice as cold. And it will feel like the hardest thing you've ever done. When you start sprinting, it'll feel like the hardest thing you've ever done. Your body will tell you it's the hardest thing you've ever done. Your back will hurt. Your legs will hurt. Your shins will hurt. Those are part of your legs, I know. Your arms, your shoulders, your neck, all hurt. You want to quit. Then you put blood flow restricting bands on your legs and arms. Now, I'm not there yet by any means. But it's going to feel, again, like the hardest thing you've ever done. The point here is every time you move forward to try to get through, it's going to feel like the hardest thing you've ever done. And if you're committing to a life like this, then you're going to continue to do the hardest thing you've ever done. And if you're not, beware. Let's go back to what I said in a recent episode. You might as well just quit now. I'm calling you to a level of honesty with yourself. There's no reason to listen to TRBM. There's no reason to associate with me. If you don't want to go the same place, do not waste your time in self-deception. It's okay if you like writing, if it's therapeutic to you. It's okay if you enjoy this process of storytelling. It's okay if you want, and I'm going to qualify okay in a second here, but it's okay if you want to self-publish stuff on Amazon and, you know, just push it, hit publish and forget it. That's okay. Nothing's going to happen. You might sell a few copies. You might hit the jackpot and one person will read the book that you self-published and think it's the best thing that they've ever read. You might be a naturally talented writer. That's fine. But don't lie to yourself. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to the people around you. Don't take half measures and be bitter. Don't do less than you can and be frustrated when it doesn't get you any success. Going live could be one of the hardest things that you've ever done because you can't take any of this back. It's out there now. I guess I could unpublish it. I don't know. I've never done it before. But I know that there was a massive level of resistance. Let's go back and talk about Stephen Pressfield. Thank you for being a guest on the show. Mr. Pressfield, I appreciate it. You were amazing. You are amazing. You have lived an amazing life because you identified that resistance never goes away. And that when you meet resistance out in the public, if you ignore it, you miss an opportunity. And if you engage with it, you're going toward the hard. You're going toward the difficult. Guys and gals, ladies, gentlemen, men, women, if it feels easy, beware. If it's simple, that's different. There are a lot of things I do now that are simple. There are a ton of behaviors that are simple because they are so oft repeated, but it's still not easy. As I'm getting in shape for the first time in almost 5 years now, I find that it is incredibly hard to make myself do simple things. I have an alarm set on my phone to do push-ups every hour on the hour. And I do that throughout my day whenever I am around. I do at least 100 push-ups. That's my goal, is to get 100 push-ups in a day. Set a 10. When that alarm goes off, stop what I'm doing, get down, do the push-up. I'm working on doing the sprinting to try to make my whole body strong and to get rid of visceral fat and to help with the carnivore diet. Those things are simple. Sprinting is simple. Like literally anyone can sprint. Not everyone is healthy enough to sprint. I'm not a doctor. I'm not here telling you to go sprint. I'm just telling you it's simple. Mechanically, it's simple. You just pump your arms and legs as fast as they will go for as long as you can handle. That's sprinting. It's super simple. Nobody here would say that sprinting is easy. Nobody. There's a huge difference. The people who are willing to sprint and stay at it and work to a point where they can do it will find profound changes in the way that they think. The people who are willing to take the cold showers will find that there is a profound difference in the way that they think. The people who control what goes in their mouth will find there is a profound difference in the way that they think. And each of those stacks and makes it easier to do the tough things. And even still, I am so trained that I find Mondays to be difficult. I find Mondays to be tough. Sometimes I'm emotionally down on Mondays, even still. This stuff goes deep. You have to fight every day, and there is no way out but through. Sad truth is, almost everybody listening right now will never get out. That's just statistics. We know. I may not get out, but I can assure you that I am working my butt off to understand resistance, to understand the lies that I tell myself, to fight back. Let's go. And if you don't want to go, it's okay to quit. I guess that's what this whole thing circles back to. But let me define it. I said I would define okay. There are people in my life who I'm going to love no matter what choices they make. Some of them I will not be part of their life if they make certain choices. There's a person in my life who I love very much who has made a choice to be manipulative and unkind and mean to me and is very destructive for my own mental health. And until that person is willing to take ownership of that person's behavior, I can't be in that person's life. But there are also other people who eat and drink whatever they want. There are people who have no ambition to be greatly successful or do anything, who simply want to relax, take it easy, who view their job as the only real responsibility that they have, providing for a family, and no desire to question the degree of hard work or what their future looks like. And those people are still friends of mine because I'm not here to walk away from good people. And I believe that there are plenty of good people out there who have settled for less than they are worth, for less than they can, for less than they might. And I want more for them. I want more for myself, but it's not my business to tell you to live your life. That is a vast difference from it being my business to speak the truth, to live as best as I can the way that I view the truth to be. So if you're tuning into the podcast, if you're watching this live, then you are the person who is willingly subjecting yourself to this message. And if you're doing that, then I'm telling you either get on board this train, let's blow through town, let's refuse to stop, don't quit. But if you are listening to this podcast and you're offended because I'm telling somebody to quit, then ask yourself, what is it you're unwilling to do right now that could make the biggest change in your life? And who has lied to you? Have you lied to yourself? Has someone that you care about lied to you? Who's telling you? Who's telling you that you look sick? Who's telling you that you must be killing yourself? I'll tell you one more story and then I'll wrap up. Back in my religious fervor, when I was a church-going Jesus freak, there was a guy. And I remember having a conversation with him in the lobby of the church. At that time, I had been attending nightly events at church, and I had been volunteering for Bible studies and a variety of different things. I was working a full-time job. I was constantly busy. And the guy said to me, "You really need to slow down." Apropos of nothing. I didn't say I was tired. I didn't say that I was burnt out. I didn't say that I was struggling. I was having the greatest success of my life. I was experiencing deep passion. Apropos of nothing, he said, "You need to slow down. You're going to burn out. People will see you when you are burning hot and bright, and they will take offense and they will tell you to stop it. They will tell you to shut up if you dare to suggest that they are wrong." And you have every right. You have every right at that moment when somebody says you better slow down or you're going to burn out. You have every right to look that person directly in the eyes and say to them, "I'm not at risk of burning out. You just don't know what it feels like to be on fire." There we go. I don't know. Maybe there's like live and people can do questions and stuff like that when you're live on YouTube. I have seen some cool people like Carrie from Homestead How do lives and answer questions and things. So I'm going to do some more exploring. This time I literally just recorded as if it was a podcast episode, but I did it live and I don't even know what that means. I will figure this out. I will get better at it. My commitment right now is to try to do more lives like this. And then I will also repurpose them into the traditional podcast episodes that I've been doing. It's going to be a learning curve for me. So bear with me. I have of late been more focused on getting one high quality podcast episode to you rather than doing two a week. I don't know what my schedule is going to look like. I've been exploring the idea of having a part-time employee do some work with me to try to get more content out there, because I'm not getting the kind of content out there that I want to. And I actually think that I have a lot more valuable content that's going unmade because I'm having to choose between putting in a good deep writing session in a day and working with bookstores and doing more things like this. So if you are listening and you have any input for me on how I can do any of these things that maybe I'm not thinking about so that I can be more efficient with my time, where I could look for an employee, maybe you're looking for an internship, I really don't know. Reach out to me, let me know. I would love to have a conversation. And if this discussion hit you in a certain way, I would invite you, please share it, like it, subscribe to my YouTube channel, subscribe to my podcast if you listen audio only, like it, 5 stars, do the whole 9 yards. Get this message out to other people. If it hit you, you know it's going to hit other people. So do that as a favor to me. Get this show out there. I am so happy that we've been able to go on this journey together, and I look forward to talking with you again here super soon.
Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening?